So this past Shabbos, Parshas Miketz, we read a haftarah with a great story. As stories go, it's one of the top haftaras. It tells about the two women that came in front of Shlomo HaMelech. They were both new mothers, and one baby was alive, one baby was dead. And Yishmael says, "Bani Achai v'nei Chameis," and Shlomo HaMelech figure out a way to solve the problem. So that's a great story, but the real story in the haftarah is, how come we hardly ever hear this haftarah? This haftarah that we read this past Shabbos, we read it. This was actually a very, it was an unusually usual reading. What do I mean? Meaning we had just read it 3 years earlier. So it was twice in 4 years. That's pretty good, because the previous time before that was 20 years earlier. The next time that we're going to read it, I'm told, is 17 years away. So we... No, listen to this pattern. It was Tavshin Samach Aleph, right. Then it was 20 years later in Tavshin Pei Aleph, then 3 years later this year, and then it's going to be 17 years till the next one.
And the Kates doesn't come out on time.
So, yeah, right. So it's not any kind of a regular pattern. I mean, we'll see soon. If there's a cycle that governs it, it will be a 247-year cycle that governs this. We'll get to that maybe later on. But right now, you know, the way things are, I would say it's just unpredictable. You have to look at the calendar. But what I want to try to explain a little bit is, why is it so unusual, and what are the special circumstances for this year that made it? I mean, like you pointed out, obviously the reason why it's unusual is because usually the Parshas Miketz is Chanukah. And when it's Chanukah, so then there's a special haftarah for Chanukah. It's only because this year Chanukah ended on Friday, Erev Shabbos, Parshas Miketz. So Parshas Miketz was already the day after Chanukah, so it was a regular Shabbos. So we read the haftarah of Miketz. But it's so rare that Miketz is not Shabbos Chanukah, so that's why we hardly ever read that haftarah. So why is it so rare, and what are the special circumstances that made it that this year Miketz didn't fall on Chanukah, and always it does? So it really starts off, the main factor is that Simchas Torah fell out on Sunday. What does this have to do with Simchas Torah? Simchas Torah is what determines the Seder HaParashiyos. The first Shabbos after Simchas Torah is Shabbos Bereishis. Now Simchas Torah, the last day of Yom Tov, is Chaf Gimel Tishrei. So we read Parashas Bereishis, the first Shabbos after Chaf Gimel Tishrei. Now if Simchas Torah is late in the week, then the Shabbos after Simchas Torah is going to have a relatively early date, and then all the Shabbos will have an earlier date. Masha'en Kain, this year, where Simchas Torah was very early in the week, that gave Shabbos Bereishis a very late date. And so to be specific, if since Simchas Torah was Sunday, so Shabbos Parshas Bereishis was a full 6 days after that, so that means that Shabbos was... and Simchas Torah is Chaf Gimel Tishrei. So Shabbos was Chaf Tes Tishrei. Chaf Tes Tishrei, that's when we started Bereishis. On a year, and a Simchas Torah doesn't fall out all the days of the week, but it could fall out on Friday, and on Sunday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday. So if it would fall out on Friday, Simchas Torah is Friday, so Shabbos would be Chaf Dalet Tishrei. If it falls out on Wednesday, then Shabbos is Chaf Vav. If it falls out on Tuesday, Shabbos is Chaf Zayin. This year it fell out on Chav Zayin. I'm sorry, this year it fell out on Sunday, so Shabbos was Chav Tes. So other years it might be Chav Dalet, Chav Vav, Chav Zayin, but this year was Chav Tes. So this year we read Bereishis late in Tishrei, right, later than any other year. And if we read Bereishis later than any other year, then the same was true for Noach, the same was true for Lecha. Every Shabbos, every Parsha, fell out later on the calendar, later in the dates of the month, than they usually do. So now we come to Vayeshev. Vayeshev, this year, was the second, the Shabbos Vayeshev was the second day of Chanukah, because Chanukah started on Friday. So Vayeshev fell out on Chof Vav Kislev. So if we think about it, on other years, right, if Simchas Torah would be 2 or 3 days later, or 5 days later, right, those are the other options, so it might have been the 21st of Kislev, or the 23rd or the 24th of Kislev. In all of those instances, Shabbos Parshas Vayeshev would have been before Chanukah, and then Shabbos Chanukah would be Parshas Miketz. But because it fell out on the 26th of Kislev, that's already on Chanukah, and it's the second day of Chanukah. Chanukah started on Friday and ended the following Friday, and that pushed Parshas Miketz off till after Chanukah. So So the first factor, the reason why things came out so funny this year is because Simchas Torah was Sunday. That made all the parshas have a very late date, and it made Vayeshev so late that it was in the middle of Hanukkah, and it made Miketz so late that it was already after Hanukkah. That's the main answer. But that can't be a complete answer, because Simchas Torah on Sunday is not a rare occurrence. Simchas Torah on Sunday simply means that Shemini Atzeres was Shabbos. Now, Shemini Atzeres is the same day of the week as the first day of Sukkot, which is the same day of the week as the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. So there's Rosh Hashanah falling out on Shabbos. That's not rare. That happens pretty often, right? We always notice that, because then we don't blow the shofar on the first day, and we don't take a lulav on the first day.
Yeah, but it's directly related to Simchas Torah being on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So shouldn't every time Simchas Torah is on a Sunday have the same?
That's my kasha. Yeah, that's my kasha. That if it was just if what I said so far was the full explanation, then every time Simchas Torah falls on Sunday, right, which is every time Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, we should have Parshas Mikis after Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. But like we said, you could go 20 years without having Parshas Mikis fall out on Hanukkah, and Rosh Hashanah falling out on Shabbos is pretty common occurrence. So there's got to be another piece to it. So so here it gets into a little bit of a complicated part of the calendar, but something that's very, I think, very important to know, like very basic to how our calendar works.
You have a double Rosh Chodesh day.
Huh? What do you mean a double Rosh Chodesh?
Sometimes Teves is 2 days Rosh Chodesh, sometimes it's 2 days Rosh
Chodesh. Okay. Chaser. What?
Double Chaser. 2 months
in. Okay, exactly. So that's more correctly what's Negeah, because Rosh Chodesh Teves is not Negeah to this, but Rosh Chodesh Kislev was. So the basic answer is that months are sometimes 29 days, sometimes 30 days. But the way that usually strikes us from the consumer point of view is how many days is Rosh Chodesh. We're more focused on that than how many days is the month. But just to translate, 2 days Rosh Chodesh means that the previous month was a 30-day month. 1 day Rosh Chodesh means that the previous month was a 29-day month. And our months alternate 30, 29. Nisan is 30, Iyar is 29. Sivan is 30, Tammuz is 29. Av is 30, Elul is 29. Tishrei is 30. Then we're up to Mar Cheshvan. Mar Cheshvan and Kislev, those 2 months are variables. Those are the only 2 months of the year that are sometimes Mali, sometimes Chaser, sometimes 30, sometimes 29. And then after that comes Teves, we get back into the pattern. Teves is Chaser, Shvat is Mali, and Adar is Chaser. But those 2 months are sometimes Mali, sometimes Chaser.
What about the second Adar?
What?
What about the second Adar?
If there's a second Adar, then that's Chaser. That's Chaser. Adar Rishon, if I'm not mistaken, Adar Rishon will be Mali, and Adar Sheni will be Chaser. I think the Adar HaSamach L'Nisan is always Chaser, if I'm not mistaken.
Does this calendar affect Eretz Yisrael as it does us?
Sure. Yes.
Same
yes.
way.
Yeah.
Because they have only one, they have one Yantav.
Right. What day, how long the months are is the same. Yes.
What he's referring to is if there's an extra parsha.
Right.
In other words, if
that would be Friday. Yeah, Shabbos.
Right. That's true. Sometimes the parashiyot will be off. Sometimes the parashiyot will be off, but not Bereishis. It'll never happen that Simchas Torah falls out on Shabbos. Meaning that would happen if Simchas Torah fell out on Shabbos.
Right.
But Simchas Torah never falls out on Shabbos. It could be Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Friday, but not Shabbos. Yeah. So Mar Cheshvan and Kislev are the 2 months that are variable. Now, the one that's relevant for us here is Mar Cheshvan. Mar Cheshvan this year was 29 days, which means that Rosh Chodesh Kislev was a 1 day Rosh Chodesh, and that 1 day was Wednesday. I'm sorry, was Tuesday, I think. Rosh Chodesh Kislev, if I'm not mistaken, was Tuesday.
Tuesday because
now, had it been Wednesday, let's imagine if Mar Cheshvan was 30 days, as it sometimes is, so then there would have been 2 days Rosh Chodesh, Tuesday and Wednesday, and the real Rosh Chodesh, the first day of Kislev, would have been Wednesday. If the first day of Kislev was Wednesday, then every date would be pushed back 1 day in the week. We said before that Shabbos Parshas Vayeshev was this year was on the 26th of Kislev. If there would have been 2 days Rosh Chodesh, if there would have been 30 days in Mar Cheshvan, it would have been the 25th of Kislev, not the 26th. And when it's the 25th, which is the first day of Hanukkah, then the following Shabbos, Parshas Miketz, will be the last day of Hanukkah, and it would still be Shabbos Hanukkah. Right, that that's a little bit of a more common occurrence, two Shabbos on Hanukkah. That happens if you have a year like this one, that Rosh Hashanah was Shabbos, but then Mar Cheshvin was Malay, so then you'd have two Shabbos Hanukkahs, and Miketz would be Shabbos Hanukkah. The convergence of factors that we had this year, which is very unusual, is that you had Rosh Hashanah falling out on Shabbos, and Mar Cheshvin was Chaser. Because Mar Cheshvin was Chaser only 29 days, so Tuesday was Rosh Chodesh, that made it that Hanukkah started on Friday and ended the following Friday, and Miketz got pushed, found itself outside of Hanukkah. So you need those two factors, that convergence, that Shabbos fell, that Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos, and that Mar Cheshvin was a Chaser. Now we mentioned that Kislev is also variable. Kislev is sometimes Mali, sometimes Chaser, but that's not going to affect this. This year it happened to be, this year we had two Chasers in a row. Mar Cheshvin was Chaser, and Kislev was Chaser. But Hanukkah starts on Chafei Kislev, and then it goes 8 days. Right. Whether we transition into Teves on the fifth day of Hanukkah or on the sixth day of Hanukkah is not going to affect anything. One interesting thing that it does affect, it's just popped up in Shul this year, this past Friday morning, somebody had Yahrzeit. So that's an interesting Yahrzeit. This past Friday, what?
I have Yahrzeit
on Rosh Chodesh. Teves.
Which is 7th of Hanukkah, and some years is the 8th day of Hanukkah.
No,
it's 6th.
Six. Okay.
Six, but the year my mom passed away, it was the 7th day of Hanukkah.
Uh-huh.
We were told to hold Aleph Teves.
So that could be confusing, but here, listen to this. Somebody had in Shul had, this was Tzvi Weiss, he had Yahrzeit for his mother, if I'm not mistaken, Friday morning.
Me too.
Yeah.
Zayis Chanukah.
But Friday, right. So this year, Friday meaning was Gimel Teves, which this year was Zayis Chanukah, was Hallel, was Kriyas HaTorah, but last year it wasn't Chanukah at all.
Right.
So when's your Yahrzeit? It's sometimes Chanukah, it's sometimes not Chanukah. Mm-hmm. There's no other date in the year that you could have that, you know, everybody knows their Yahrzeit, either it's a regular day or it's some kind of a special day. But Gimel Teves, some years is regular, sometimes some years is special, depending on Kislev. That's totally on whether Kislev is Mali or Chaser.
But it happens to everybody who has Yahrzeit on the day that it's Mali. In other words,
Anybody whose Yahrzeit is the 30th of a month.
The 30th of those 2 months of
Cheshvan or Kislev.
Of any month, which is sometimes.
Right,
sometimes.
Right.
Cheshvan or Kislev, if you have Yahrzeit.
Right. Well, the 30th of Kislev is not going to affect so much because it's Hanukkah regard. Okay, all right, it affects most of
it. You don't know when your Yahrzeit is, my point is. When is your Yahrzeit on the year that's not?
Right, if somebody died on the 30th of Mar Cheshvan or Kislev and then on a year that you don't have a 30th, so when do you observe the Yahrzeit? If I'm not mistaken, you observe it on the first. On
Chodesh. I think it happens also when there's extra years.
There's lots of interesting things that happen without the Rishon.
So it's not a day. It can either be on a year or it's not an extra year.
Not a leap year.
It could come out because
other Aleph you can have a Lamed.
A date that won't exist, right.
Other Aleph you have a Lamed.
Uh-huh.
If it's a regular other, you don't have a Lamed.
Good point.
It was great. I got an Aliyah on Friday.
Okay.
It's some shuls. I've seen some shuls not allow the personal Yahrzeit. Let's say Hallel.
Okay.
So in his example where it's Rosh
Chodesh. That's what we did also.
We're not called Rosh Chodesh. But okay. In his example, if it's a year that it's Rosh Chodesh, that person would not be allowed to say Hallel at least.
Okay. Okay. So like I mentioned, the phenomenon that we're looking at of Parshas Miketz being after Hanukkah was totally just on Mar Cheshvan being Chaser. The Kislev being Chaser doesn't affect Hanukkah. It can affect the Yahrzeit. It affects, you know, what date is Hanukkah. But it also affects something else on this year's calendar. There's another anomaly that's coming up this week. Asar B'Teves falling out on Friday. Very unusual. We never fast on a Friday, except, you know, Asar B'Teves sometimes falls out that way. Now, what that needs is the combination that we have this year of it was Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos, and both Mar Cheshvan and Kislev were chaser. See, if Mar Cheshvan, this past Friday was Gimel Teves, but Gimel Teves would have been Thursday if, would have been Shabbos if Kislev was Malay, right, and then Aser Teves would be Shabbos, which never happens, which means that you'll never have a year. You'll never have a year that Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, and then you'll have Chaser Malay, in other words, Kesidra, and that will never happen because that would have made Aser Teves on Shabbos, which we don't have. But Aser Teves on Friday, which you could have, that is only because of this unique combination. The Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos, and then you had both Mar Cheshvan and Kislev being Chaser. That produces the anomaly of Aser Teves falling out on Friday.
Who's keeping this calendar?
Does it
happen, what?
Well, same question. Who's keeping this calendar that we make sure that we that it's a funny question in a way, but
yeah. No, so I'm actually
not have an argument.
Okay, so that's what I'm going to continue, and that's exactly where we're going. Let's talk about what this is totally on and how we keep track of this and who decides this. And are there ever fights about it? Are there? That's what we'll discuss later on in the year. Yeah, but right now we don't have a Sanhedrin, a Beis Hagadol. So who's? Yeah.
So every fast days on a Friday, other than this situation.
No, this is the only the way our.
And it's once every.
The town of Esther we observe on Thursday.
So why don't we observe Aser Teves on Thursday?
Because town of Esther we observe on Thursday when Purim is Sunday. Purim is Sunday. It's never if it would fall on Friday we would, but we don't have Purim falling on Shabbat. You dial it on Shabbat.
When
Aser
Teves comes down on Shabbat, which you can't, we would fast.
The only day that
you mean Aser Teves, right? Aser Teves, right? The days it brings down such a sheet, but that doesn't happen in our calendar.
But if it would, original service,
shortest.
So it's once every how many years does this happen?
So it's not. This is not a regular pattern. Although again, as we'll see, hopefully, if there is any kind of a regularity to it, you have to look at it in a 247 year cycle, and then see which years it comes out. But let's try to explain it a little bit at a time.
Can they come up fall out on Shabbos?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But we will push it off to Sunday. Sure. Okay, we will push it off to Sunday. Yeah. So what's this tally on? Why is it that these 2 months are sometimes Mali, sometimes Chaser? What this really gets. The calendar really starts with Rosh Hashanah, right? Which I guess is natural. That's the place to start the calendar.
Yeah.
What day is Rosh Hashanah? So Rosh Hashanah is the first day of Tishrei. Tishrei, the months are based on the moon. So the day of the Moilad of Tishrei should be Rosh Hashanah. But there are some factors that interfere with that. The main factor that interferes with that is Lo Adu Rosh. That Chazal set up that we don't want Rosh Hashanah falling out on Adu. Aleph, Dalet, Vav, that's Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday. Why not? If Rosh Hashanah falls out on Sunday, so let's take the other two first. If Rosh Hashanah falls out on Wednesday or Friday, then Yom Kippur would be either Friday or Sunday, meaning Yom Kippur is 2 days after Rosh Hashanah in the week. So if Rosh Hashanah was Wednesday, Yom Kippur would be Friday. If Rosh Hashanah was Friday, Yom Kippur would be Sunday. Either of those situations has 48 hours in a row that you can't do any malach, even for Eichel Nefesh. So Chazal did not want that happening, not without Shabbos clocks and blachs and stuff like that. So no, you can't have Yom Kippur on Friday or Sunday. Therefore, no, we don't allow Rosh Hashanah on Wednesday or Friday. The last one is a little bit surprising. The Rosh Hashanah can't be a Sunday is because if Rosh Hashanah was Sunday, Hoshana Rabbah would fall out on Shabbos. And Chazal didn't want Hoshana Rabbah to be on Shabbos. Which is not so clear why that is. Some Achrayim talk about it, give different theories. It's not really an official right answer, possibly because it's a day of Tachnunim. I saw in the Dirsh Mishaburi, he brings that, I don't remember from where, he brings that. One of the classical reasons is because all the Arabis is Shemi Avirenu, Arabis is Shemi. But Achrayim say that no, it's clear in the Gemara that we don't make a Shemi Avirenu on Arava. So I don't remember who he quotes from that. Somebody says that because it's a day to be marbe but tefillah v'sachanunim, that's not appropriate for Shabbos. Maybe that's the reason. What? Yeah, Yom Kippur overrides that. Okay, but
the
there's not Yom Kippur.
What? Yeah, I still have the Davis Kippur there.
Okay, I hear. Okay, yeah, maybe that's part of it. But they didn't want Hashanah Rabbah to be on Shabbos. So no Rosh Hashanah on Sunday. So those are the 3 days excluded. Lay Adu Rosh. So Rosh Hashanah is allowed to be on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, and Shabbos, but not Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. So if the Mailid falls on one of those 3 days, then we push Rosh Hashanah until the following day. So sometimes Rosh Hashanah is on the day of the Mailid, but sometimes, almost half the time, I mean 3 out of the 7 possibilities, it's got to be the day after the Mailid. Now, there's also, now here we get into a little bit of nitty-gritty details, but you'll see in the story that we're leading to, this becomes very important. Sometimes, even if the Mailid falls out on an eligible day, we don't make Hashanah on that day. And this is based on a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, where it says that the day is 24 hours, right? If you calculate from, meaning look at the days starting, going from night to night, let's say from sundown to sundown, and it's 24 hours. The first 18 of those 24 hours, if the Mailid falls in those 18 hours, then you make that day Rosh Hashanah. But if the Mailid falls in the last 6 of the 24 hours, that's called a Mailid Zakein. I'm not sure why it's called that. It means a Mailid that came late or too late, and then Rosh Hashanah gets pushed off to the next day. Which means if it's any time in the afternoon, right, those 6 hours are from noon until sundown. If the day of the Mailid is it comes out afternoon, then Rosh Hashanah is not that day, it's the following day. So those are two reasons why Rosh Hashanah is sometimes not the day of the Mailad. And now that we gave two reasons, so those two reasons could converge, which means that sometimes Rosh Hashanah will be not only a day after the Mailad, but even 2 days after the Mailad. Mm-hmm. If it's a Mailad Zakein, and you push it off to the next day, but then the next day is Adu, so then you have to push it off to the day after that. So sometimes Rosh Hashanah needs to be not the day of the Mailid, but a day later or 2 days later. Now, how do you make that happen? You can't, right? Elul usually is 29 days. So what are we going to say? That if we have to push Rosh Hashanah by a day, you'll make Elul 30 days? We're not allowed to do that. Elul is never 30 days. But even let's say, okay, that would be a halbitzar, a farm. Maybe occasionally we can make it Elul 30 days. But what if we have to push it off 2 days? You can make Elul 31 days? There's no such thing. There's no such thing as a month. In the Torah, that's 31 days. So if you need to make Rosh Hashanah a day or two after the Mailad, the only way to make that work is by planning in advance and adding days to the previous year, adding or subtracting days from the previous year to make that year longer or shorter so that Rosh Hashanah should fall out on an eligible day, on a day that it's allowed to be. So that's why they needed some elasticity in the calendar. So those 2 months were chosen, Rosh Hashanah and Kislev. If everything is fine, like if Rosh Hashanah is going to fall out on a good day, looking ahead to the following year, then it'll go Kisidron. It'll go, which means Rosh Hashanah Chaser and Kislev Mole, because remember, Tishrei was Mole. So Rosh Hashanah Chaser, Kislev Mole, Teves Chaser, that will continue Kisidron. But if they need to make the year longer to accommodate Rosh Hashanah, then they'll add a day into Mar Cheshvan, and then they'll make them both Male, and that's called the Shana Shalema. If they need to make Rosh Hashanah come a day earlier, so then they'll make Kislev Chaser, let them both be Chaser, that's called the Shana Chasera. And that helps, that's another way of manipulating Rosh Hashanah, that it should come out on an eligible day.
So this is done a year earlier?
Right, this is a year, or occasionally even 2 years, right? Depending on how much manipulation they need to do, they sometimes have to plan this out 2 years earlier to make sure the Rosh Hashanah falls out on the right day. So now what we just learned gives us the 12 possibilities for how to describe a year, and there's a 2-digit code that describes every year, a 2-digit code that has 3 possible or 4 possible letters for the first digit and 3 for the second digit. And it goes like this. We said Lo Yadu Rosh. So that means the days of Rosh Hashanah could be are Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Shabbos, right? Beis, Gimel, Hay, and Zion. So every year, on a sophisticated calendar, every year we'll have a two-digit code. The first digit will be a Bezer, Gimel, Hey, or Zayin. That describes when Rosh Hashanah is. The second digit will be either a Ches, a Shin, or a Chaf. Ches means Chaseira. Shin means, that means Macheshvin and Kislev are both 29 days. Shin means Shlema, that means they're both 30 days. Or a Chaf. Chaf means Kisidron. They go 29, 30. So a year will get that two-digit code, and if you look at that, you'll know what day of the year every yom tov falls out on. You could calculate every yom tov based on that information, although you still need one more piece of information, that is whether it's a ibriyar, a pshuta, or a
mubaras. Where is that code?
You'll see it on some calendars, but we shouldn't talk about it in the tour. The tour in Tav Chav Ches talks about all this by Richas. But there are calendars that have this, and in Poiskim they'll talk about a year. The Mashal, this year is a Zayin Ches year. This year is described as Zayin Ches. Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos, and it was Chaser, Mecheshvan, and Kislev were both 29 days. You could have, you know, what day is Rosh Hashanah next year? I think Thursday. So it's a Hey, and truthfully, I have no idea, but let's just suppose for argument's sake that next year Cheshvan is 29 and Kislev is 30, so it will be a Hey Chaf.
What is this code called? What is it referred to as?
I don't know.
Two-digit code.
Yeah. Yeah. In Poiskim, through the Shulchan Aruch, and in Thursday. Later Poiskim, what?
Rosh Hashanah is on Thursday.
Rosh Hashanah is Thursday, yeah.
Three-day
Yom Tov. Oh, we have to stop preparing. Three-day Yom Tovs. Three
Erev
Tov Shilins. Okay, well, okay, in this Shem next, Elul Tishrei, we're going to have a share on Erev Tav Shilin. So those are, that two-digit code, that really identifies where all the days on the calendar are supposed to be. Now, is there any cycle to this? So we know there's a 19-year cycle on the calendar that determines the leap years. This year is a leap year. If I'm not mistaken, this is year 3. Of the 19-year cycle. Every 19 years, we make a leap year on year 3 and 6 and 8, 11, 14, 17, and 19. Wow. Those are the, there's a simit for that, Guach Yad Zat. That it doesn't mean anything, as far as I know, but Guach is, what?
Just
in the right? Gimel Vav Ches, and then Yad. That's the trickiest part. Yad is really Ya'ad, Yud Aleph, and Yud Dalet, and Yud and Zat, Yud Zayin, and Yud Tes. So Guach Yad Zat is a shorthand way of remembering when the leap years are, and that we have a 19-year cycle, and it just repeats itself again and again and again. The price can bring down that in the times of the Goinim, there was a Goin Rav Nachshon Goin, who figured out that these cheshbonos that we were talking about before, that you have to adjust your marcheshvan and kislev to make Hashanah fall out on the right day relative to the Maylad, with Maylad Zakin and with Loya Duraish, the patterns will repeat themselves every 13 cycles. Meaning, if you, a cycle being 19 years, so if you, each 19-year cycle will be different than the one before and the one after it, but there are only 13 possibilities, meaning in the 19-year cycle, each year will be assigned this two-digit code. And the next 19-year cycle, you'll assign them again two-digit codes, and they'll be different than the previous 19-year cycle. But those columns will repeat themselves every 13 years. So there's 13 variations of the 19-year cycle. What?
13 cycle.
13. Right, 13...
13 variations of the 19-year cycle.
Right, right. I'm sorry, right, I said 13 years. No, I don't know. Right, every 13... Meaning, I meant to say every 13 columns. If you make a column describing each year in the 19-year cycle with a two-digit code, so those columns will look different, but every 13th column will look the same as the one 13 before it. So that's why I say it's a 247-year cycle. Now, it doesn't mean that there's anything that'll only happen every 247 years, right? This Mikit falling out of Hanukkah doesn't only happen every 247 years. But that which there was a 20-year break and then a 3-year break and then a 17-year break and then I don't know when the next one is going to be, that pattern it does repeat itself every 247 years. Because that's because of where you're holding in the cycle of 13 times 19. That was this chiddush of Rav Nachshon Goyin, and it was brought down in the Pesachim afterwards. And the Torah brings it down. The Torah writes this all out by Arichos, and he actually writes out the columns. He writes out, I think, 13 columns of 19 years, giving the two-digit code for each one, so that's supposed to enable you to make your calendar forever. The Pri Chodesh points out that the Rav Nachshon Goyin's cycle actually is not perfect, and sometimes it doesn't work out. The Rosh Hashanah doesn't come out the right way, and he points out very few places. Again, it's 247 places on this chart. He points out a few that are incorrect. And the Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha, interestingly, he says that, you know, going forward, looking ahead, there are a few more that are incorrect based on the Pre-Chadosh's corrections. And he goes, the most recent one was Tavshin Mem Zayin, that was 1987. He says that if you follow the tourist charts, you're going to come up with the wrong calendar, but that's okay. Kedei Yisrael will be on top of it. And he tells us that it should really be, and he gives the two-digit code of what the year is really supposed to look like.
Is it correct after that? Or it messes up the whole...
No, I don't think it messes up. I think you can continue following the chart. And then the Mishnah Berurah writes that the next time that you run into a problem is somewhere in tough, I don't remember what year he wrote, tough, something, or tough kuf something, and he says, but we don't have to take care of that, because there's no question that the gula will come long before that, and we'll be mekadosh al pi ra'iyah, and we're not going to need these charts anymore. Okay. Now, it's fascinating that he nevertheless went ahead and corrected Tavshin Mem Zayin. Tavshin Mem Zayin, it's 1987, I mean, he was writing, this chelek dal in the Mishnah Berurah, I don't know, he was writing around 80 years, maybe 85 years before that, and he made a point of telling you the right way to do Tavshin Mem Zayin, but for, and I don't remember what the next instance was, it's still quite a bit into the future, but for that one, he said, I'm not going to bother fixing that one, because I can't imagine that the Gula Shlem is not going to come before that. So there might be some, you know, some prophetic, you know, some Ruach HaKodesh in there, that he drew a line between those 2 years. Be that as it may. Oh, come on. What? Yeah, okay. It's in the Bir Halacha in Shavura Bir Halacha in Taf Chaf Ches. That's where you find it.
What's the point of mentioning when the Milet is?
That's a good question. Why do we have to tell the people?
Yes, it does.
Why?
Kiddush Levana. Right. It does affect the Seif HaZman for Kiddush Levana. Yeah, you have. The Kiddush Levan is done in the first half of the month, right, but not the month on the calendar, the first half of the moon, meaning until it's full, and that's half of the time from Moilid to Moilid. So the Seif Zman for Kiddush Levan really is totally on the Moilid. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure, is that the reason why we announce it? I'm not sure. I don't know. It could be there's more of a reason, I don't remember.
And who figures it out?
Well, now it's printed in the calendars. The Torah gives you instructions about how to figure it out. Because every lunar cycle, is Chazal give us, is 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 halakim. 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim. That's each lunar cycle. So every Milad is much time after the Milad before that. So the Torah basically says that, you know, if you lost track and you don't know when the Milet is, so just go back to Bria Sa'ilam and count up all the months and calculate 29 days and 12 hours and 793 halakha for each one. But he makes it easier for you. He says, because, you know, you don't have to bother. He does a lot of the math. He says you don't have to actually add up, you know, the 29 days of each month. You just want to know what day of the week it is, you know, and what hour of the day. So you just have to know those 29 and some odd days, how much do they move in the week every year? And then he says you could condense it a little more. How much does it move in the week every 19-year cycle? And he does all that math for you. And then he says, now just count up how many 19-year cycles there's been and then make the adjustments. Wow. So you can always figure out the model. But So you see that the calendar, specifically when you make Rosh Hashanah, is not always so simple, right? It's not, and how many days in Cheshvan, how many days in Kislev, it's not always so simple. There's a degree of subjectivity, right? How you adjust the calendar to make Rosh Hashanah when you want it. So you asked before, who's doing this? So nowadays, it's all on the books. It's somebody made up a chart over 1,000 years ago, Rav Nachshon Goyen. And it's been tweaked a bit, you know, since then. Again, the Torah was busy with the pre-chadash, did some of the tweaking, but it's all on charts now, and it kind of runs on automatic. Right? Although, like we said, you have to have some Daily Israel overseeing it, because it's not always going to work right. Sometimes you have to make an adjustment, but it's very, very limited. I would call it a very low-maintenance calendar. Since Rav Nachshon Goyen, it's been a very low-maintenance calendar. But before Rav Nachshon Goyen, Rav Nachshon Goyen is about 1,000 years ago, I think in the 900s, in the late 900s. Before Rav Nachshon Goyen, it was a high-maintenance calendar, meaning the Gedolei Yisrael had to decide every year, what are we doing with Mer Cheshvan and Kislev this year, 29 days, 30 days, depending on the way Rosh Hashanah is supposed to fall out next year, or maybe the following year, right? You have to look ahead to the Rosh Hashanah, see where the Maalid is. Is it a good day for Rosh Hashanah? Is it not a good day for Rosh Hashanah? Do we have to adjust it? And then go back and decide what we're doing with this year's Mer Cheshvan and Kislev. Mm-hmm. And so it was fluid, and there were Batei Dinim that were in charge of this. Usually, things ran smoothly, even though it was high maintenance, but we had rules, right? We, like I said before, Loyadu Roish and Moilad Zaken, and there are also another couple of rules that determine when you sometimes have to push off Rosh Hashanah from the Yom HaMoilad. And we know if Rosh Hashanah can't be on the Yom HaMoilad, so we account, you know, we compensate for that by adding or taking away dates in the Cheshvan and Kislev. So we knew the rules, and basically, even though it was high maintenance, but it ran smoothly, meaning every year the base would announce how the Yom Tovim were going to be that year, and people had to wait for the basin to announce it. But the basin knew what they were doing, and it ran smoothly. Until one year. Now, this the story, Maisa Shahaya, this was in the year 922 of the Common Era, 921 really. Tough Reish Pei Beis, but I'll go a couple years ahead of that. It really starts with Tough Reish Pei Dalid, the Rosh Hashanah of Tough Reish Pei Dalid, but we're going to work backwards. The Rosh Hashanah of Tough Reish Pei Dalid, right, which was the year 923 of the Common Era, right? So exactly 1,100 years ago, right? We are now in Tough Shem Pei Dalid of the 6th millennium. We're talking now, I'm saying Tough Reish Pei Dalid sounds like 100 years ago, but it's 100 years ago in the previous millennium. So it's exactly 1,100 years ago from now. That year, Rosh Hashanah, well, the Moilad of Tishrei, right, which ostensibly should be the day of Rosh Hashanah usually, fell on Shabbos, which is fine. You're allowed to have it on Shabbos. However, it fell out after Chatzais. How much after Chatzais? 218 chalakim, if I'm remembering correctly. So, something like that. 200 and, you know, I take that back, but 200 and something chalakim. 200 and something chalakim, which is about 12 minutes, I think. So it was around 12 p.m., so the Beis Din in Bavel said, okay, it's a little bit ironic what's going to happen over here, but we have our rules. It's after Chatzais, that's called a Maila Zaken. So that pushes it off from Shabbos to Sunday. Sunday? Can't have Rosh Hashanah on Sunday, Le'adu Reish. So we're going to push it off to Monday. So it's a little bit ironic that because of this 12 minutes that it was too late, it ends up getting pushed off 2 days, but them's the rules. So the Beis Din in Bavel, again, looking ahead to Tough Reish Pei Dalid, they saw the Rosh Hashanah is going to have to be Monday. So they had to get to work on that earlier. So when the new year of Tough Reish Pei Beis was approaching, they announced that Tough Reish Pei Beis is going to be a Shlema, meaning they're going to make Mole, Mer Cheshvan, and Kislev, and they're going to do the same with Tough Reish Pei Gimel, right? Put in, is that right? If you put in extra days, so each date is then coming a day earlier in the week. I mean the other way around. They made him chasera. They took out a date so that each date comes sooner. You know, I'm confusing myself, but I think they made them chasera so that Rosh Hashanah could be Monday instead of Shabbos. So Tafresh Pei Beis and Tafresh Pei Gimel, they made chaseiras. They took out a day from each year.
It's a week earlier. Mm-hmm. They rolled it back, so it's the Monday before that Shabbos?
No. That way Rosh Hashanah, instead of being on Shabbos, the Yom HaMeilid will be on Monday. You make the date later in the week by adding days, so you make Rosh Chodesh is going to be Tuesday rather than Wednesday. Every date comes a date earlier in the week. I'm sorry, you're right. So we need to add a day. So they made them Malaya. They made the year Shlemas. Added days into the calendar, and that'll push off the days of the calendar later in the week, and so Rosh Hashanah is going to fall out on Monday. That's what the Basin in Bavel did. In Eretz Yisrael, there was a chacham named Aaron ben Meir, and he said that, I disagree with what you just did, because even though I know there's a rule called Moled Zakein, but I think you have the wrong version of this rule. You say Moled Zakein goes by Chatzos, and this Moled came about 12 minutes after Chatzos. I have a Mesira that it's totally on Azman a little bit later than Chatzos. He had a number of 642 Chalakim, which is more than half an hour. It's, maybe 40-something minutes. Maybe a little less, maybe 30-something minutes. I don't know. Let's just say, for argument's sake, it's around 35 minutes. I'm not doing the math now. So he said that it's not called the Moiled Zuck until the Moiled comes after 12:30-something. 12:12, that's not a Moiled Zuck. Now, where the number 642 comes from is a mystery. That was he said he had such a Masira. And he said, by the way, when he said he has a Masira in his family, he claimed to be a descendant from, meaning, he's the head of the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, which is the position that's been held by Hillel's family, right? And Rabbeinu HaKadosh's family, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, who was 10 days after Hillel. He said, I'm from that family. I'm the Ben Achar Ben. It's continued all these years. This is now 700 years after Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So that's dozens of days. But he said, I'm still in that family, and I am occupying that position, which was all the Nesiyim in Eretz Yisrael. And I have a Messiah in my family that Moiled Zakein is totally in 642 Chalakim after Chatzais. Now, I don't know for sure where the 642 Chalakim are, but it is the number of Chalakim, you'll see in Paiskim, that accumulate in the moving of the Moiled over 6 months. And so it may have something to do with the question of Benisa Nivra Olam, Tishrei Nivra Olam, some combination of the two, right? I said before that we always calculate the Moiled based on going back to Bria Sa'ilam. So maybe there's some kind of Shekel Teira having to do with those factors. But whatever the Shekel Teira was, his Messiah was, he said, that Moiled Zakein is really totally on 642 minutes after, okay. I'm 642, thank you, Chalakim, after Chatzos, which means that this Moiled, the Moiled we're looking at for Tavish Beidal, is not a Moiled Zakein. That's not a Moiled that's too late. That's a Moiled which is fine. It could be Chal Bay B'Yayim. It's Shabbos. Shabbos is a fine day for Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah Tavish Beidal is supposed to be on Shabbos. That's a two-day discrepancy, which means I don't have to add a day to Tavish Beis and Tavish Pei Gimel. So he got up, and it's brought down in the Makaris that we have for the story, that he on Yom HaShanah Rabbah of Tafresh Pei Beis, he went up to Har HaZeisim, because that's in olden days where the basin always announced the calendar stuff from. And he made a big hachraza that we're not following the calendar of the basin in Bavel. It's a mistake. Pesach is a day earlier, and all the other Yom Tevim are a day earlier, and next year's Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are a day earlier. And the following year, all the Yom Tovim are going to be 2 days earlier, including Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because Rosh Hashanah is going to be on Shabbos. And this was a major period. This is the last time that Klal Yisrael experienced such a thing, that there's a real fight about the calendar, which is major. The calendar is really, the unity of all of Klal Yisrael, that we all follow the same calendar everywhere in the world. In the year Tafresh Pei Beis of previous millennium, there were two calendars by two different Batei Dinim. And
but don't we see generally that only the Beis Din in Israel was mechadish the chaydish?
Ah, very good point. That they, this was a big part. You know, what's the fight totally on? So after, so one after. Part of the shaila is so who's right? Right? Who has the right pshat or the right messiah about Moed Zaken? That's I guess one part of the question. But as Josh is pointing out very correctly, I think, another part of the shaila is never mind who's right, but who has the authority? Whose word goes in terms of being Mekadesh the Levana? And this, you know, is the, I don't know the Indian well, but from the little that I know, I think is really totally in a machlekes Rambam and Ramban, which obviously they were not even dreams yet, but they came a couple centuries later. But there's machlekes Rambam and Ramban about how our calendar works nowadays. We don't have basically being mekadesh the Levana, and the Ramban says that it really all works on automatic, based on Hillel HaKatan, who was really one of the last of the Smuchim, and he put the Kiddush into all the subsequent Chadashim. The Rambam argues, the Rambam holds that it's always taloi on the Kiddush of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, but you don't have to worry. You just figure out wherever you are, you figure out how the calendar is supposed to work out, and you, even though you don't have email, and you live a long way away from Eretz Yisrael, but you could be sure that there are Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, and they're following the same rules that you're following, they'll come up with the same cheshbon. So they'll be mekadesh it, and wherever you are, in Bavel, or in Ashkenaz, or Sfard, or New York, you can just figure out how the calendar is supposed to work. But the reason why there's Kiddush in those Yom Tovim is because the Beis Din Eretz Yisrael was mekadesh it, which means that according to the Rambam, we're really supposed to follow Aaron ben Meir. According to the Ramban, it's totally on who, it doesn't really matter geographically, it's really totally more on who's right. And then, so what ended up happening in that instance was that, you know, the almost there was kind of a stalemate because all the Talmidei Chachamim were in a Geya B'davar. Because even if we assume that everybody was just Mechavim L'Shem Shemayim and everybody just wanted to get it right, and the politics was not a factor in motivating anyone. But there's no question that this was a very political issue. Because what they're really arguing, you know, who gets to decide the calendar is kind of like saying, who's the boss of the Jewish world? Who is the leading authority in the Torah world? So for the Chachamim of Bavel to send out a letter to everybody saying, we're right, he's wrong, don't listen to Aaron ben Meir, a lot of people might roll their eyes and say, well, of course they're going to say that. And likewise for the Beis Din Eretz Yisrael to say, listen to us, you'll have the same thing. From what I've read, it seems that the way that it was resolved was, the person that's most credited for resolving this was Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon, this is before he was the Gaon, meaning before he was called to become Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel, he was from Mitzrayim. And being from Mitzrayim, he also happened to have been a friend of Aaron ben Meir. The two of them worked together a lot. And that gave him more credibility. And he said, we have to follow the Beis Din in Bavel. He said that they're right. I think partially that they're bigger. That's really the main Makom Torah in the world. Those are the biggest Rosh Yeshiva. And they have the right interpretation of Moed Zaken. He endorsed what the Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel said. But he wasn't from Bavel. I mean, if he had learned there, but he was Lamaisa in Mitzrayim. So maybe that gave him more credibility. I'm not sure. That's maybe just conjecture. But the story is that Rav Sadia Gaon was the one that was able to bring Klal Yisrael back together around, you know, supporting the calendar of the Beis Din in Bavel. What?
It's still 9:33.
20. So I think nobody really knows for sure, but from what I've read, I think most people think that it was short lived. There were a few years; those 2-3 years, there was really a period, and then after that, it was resolved. Everybody was following the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael.
But then it was moot after that.
So over those 2-3 years, people were...
Right, that's probably true. Although...
So
Lav Dafka. So it might have taken an. You're right. It doesn't continue to have an effect because every year, right, the following year, if Rosh Hashanah was on the Moed, so everyone would be on the same page. Although it might take a year or two of adjustments to get you back to the day of the Moed. Right. So it wouldn't go on forever, even if it was ever resolved.
It was a Jewish population in Mitzrayim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? What year was that?
This is in the 900s. 200 years before the Rambam came.
They went back to Mitzrayim. How did that?
It came from Babel and they went.
Yeah. So yeah. From Babel. From Babel they went to. That's not Mitzrayim. Right.
Huh?
Yeah.
The Shvatim were there.
Why?
882.
Who? Okay.
Why didn't they go there to
Shvatim? Some Zman when they were conveyed under Chodesh.
Yeah.
With the Riyah.
Jews who live in Poland, right? And with, Germany.
So there was. What happened when they saw it after Chatzos?
Yeah.
And so then there was a case that Elul was 31 days. How did they, you know, what do you do when it did happen?
That's a good question. They were Mekadesh L'Piyah Re'iyah, and it was a Moilid Zaken, and it was a Le'ah Duroish, something had to give. Then they would have one of the things that they were trying to avoid. Because Lamaisa they never made a 31-day month. That is no such thing. Okay, so that was the story there. And it was so that I guess that's a little bit of an overview of how our calendar works and an example of one time when it didn't work so well. But since then, as far as I know, we've never had that kind of a situation. I'll just, in the last few minutes, let's just get back to where we started, which is the actual story in the Haftarah, right? Shlomo HaMelech, two women that came. So everybody knows the basic outline of the story. They each one said, B'nei Achai, B'nei Chameis. And Shlomo HaMelech said, okay, they both want the baby. There's only one baby for the two of them. So we're going to cut the baby in half and give one to each mother. So one of the mothers said, no, don't do that. It's that's the last thing I want. Give the baby to the other woman. And the other woman said, no, that sounds like a fine idea. So Shlomo HaMelech said, okay, we're going to give the baby to the first woman because that's the evidence that she's telling the truth. There's a fascinating subplot over here or a story behind the story, which is based on presumably a medrash, but we don't have the medrash. The makor that we have for this is a Me'iri. But the Me'iri says it's coming from a medrash. Somebody told me, I think, on Sunday that there's a Shirashirim Rabbah, there's an allusion to a little bit of this, but not with all the details. But the story is like this. The Me'iri has Sakasha. This is the Me'iri in Yevamos HaFidayin HaMeveiz. And he has Sakasha. He says, I don't understand the second woman, the one that I just presented second. Shlomo HaMelech, each one came in and said, B'nei Achai, B'nei Chameis, I want the living baby. Shlomo said, I'm going to cut him in half. So woman number one said, no, don't do that, give him to the other woman. So now the other woman should be happy. That's what she wanted. She said, give me the baby. And now her competitor just said, yeah, give her the baby. So she should have said, thank you very much, and walked off with the baby. But she didn't. She said, no, kill him. Kill him. Why do I want to kill him? She's just, I understand you don't want to give in b'shumayif, and you'd rather a dead baby than have the other person win. But the other, right, that, okay, it's very bad midas, but that, you know, we can relate to that. But the other person already conceded defeat. So at this point, why are you saying kill the baby? So Miri said that there's a little bit of a subplot. These two women were not two strangers to each other. Was a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. Okay, and they were living in the same house, and their husbands had died, and they both just had a newborn baby. Now, this mother-in-law, obviously she had a son who was an adult, actually she has a daughter-in-law, and he just died. Let's just say for argument's sake, he was 20 years old. Right? So she had a baby 20 years ago. That was the man who married this young woman, and he just died. And now she just had another baby, a newborn baby. She didn't have any other children in the interim. So she had two sons, 20 years apart from each other.
The mother.
Her son died. Her son just married this young woman. That daughter-in-law, she's newly married. She just had her first baby. And her husband died. So now, this daughter-in-law, whose husband just died, so she's thinking, Yeramis, right? Her husband died. Her husband died with no children and with a brother. Then she would be in big trouble. What do I mean in big trouble? There's a mitzvah of Yibam. Okay, that's not the end of the world. But the problem is, but the Yavam is 2 days old. So, right, he can't do Yibam, which means that he can't do Chalitza until he's Bar Mitzvah. So this is a young woman whose husband just died and she's locked up for the next 13 years. That's really a bad situation. But she's fine. There's no bad situation because she has a baby. She has a baby. There's no mitzvah to do Yibam. Her husband died with a son, with a child. So that's great. Her mother-in-law also had a baby, which means there's a yavam. That baby represents danger to her, right? Because there's a yavam, which theoretically could obligate her to wait. But she has her own baby, and that means there's no danger. Then in the middle of the night, her baby died. Now, if her baby died, the daughter-in-law's baby, the young woman's baby died, and now she's in big trouble. He died, again, a few days after he was born. So in halacha, we can consider him a nafel. So we're going to say her husband just died with that, and now there's no more children. So there's no children, and she's chayav to do yibam. And her husband has a brother. This baby that was just born a few days ago is her husband's brother. So now she's a kukul yibam, and the yavam is an infant, which means that she's now tied up to wait for the next 13 years before she can do anything. That's a disaster. But she could solve the whole thing if she just very quietly switches the babies, so that now she's doubly protected. In the morning, she's going to say, I have a child. My husband didn't die without children. And you don't have a child, so there's no yavam anyway. Because her mother-in-law's child, that's the yavam. Mm-hmm. But now her mother-in-law's child is dead, so there is no yavam. Her child is alive, so there's no mitzvah yibam. Mm-hmm. So there's no yibam, there's no yavam, everything is great. The way it really happened, that her child died, so there is yibam, because now her husband's dead with no children. And there is a yavam, because her mother-in-law has a baby, so that would be very bad. Switch the babies, and now there's no yavam, and there's no yibam, and she's great. Except for one thing. Let's say she can get away with this, let's say the court will believe her, Basin will believe her, nobody will stop her from remarrying, because she's not zekuka liyibam, but the only problem is, but deep down she knows that it's not true. She is going to have on her conscience that she's living in sin because she's not allowed to marry anyone. Then they come to the Shlomo HaMelech, and the two women are both saying, B'nei Echai, and Shlomo HaMelech says, cut the baby in half. Cut the baby in half. That solves all the problems. Because because this baby is really her yavam. But if she has no children, so there's a mitzvah yibam, and there's a yavam. But if the yavam gets killed, then there's no yavam. Yeah. So then she's allowed to marry. She was going to marry anyway, she was going to marry.
Bother her conscience?
Right. That's going to be Shlomo's Aveira. She wasn't a great Yirei Shemayim. She was a teeny weeny little Yirei Shemayim. So now, right, when Shlomo, she was going to get married but be living in sin. But if Shlomo Melech will do her the favor of cutting the baby, then she'll get married with a clear conscience. Okay, not entirely clear, but at least in Issa v'Heter, clear. Yeah, Menon L'Chaver, right? We don't hold Menon L'Chaver. Did Shlomo Melech know this? Yeah. I don't know. This story works either way.
I don't know.
Yeah, he probably did. Oh yeah, I don't know if the Meiri says, I don't remember if the Meiri says that he did know it or he didn't know it or just, but he says that was the background to the story. That's why the woman said, kill the baby. And then Shlomo Melech said, okay, now I see what's going on, and that's why he awarded the baby to the mother-in-law.
But Balabat